Calling all Swifties and champions of change, Like a Girl Media is rolling out the red carpet for you with our Thrive Like a Girl contest. We're all about celebrating powerful women leaders who inspire us to dream big and push boundaries. And who embodies that spirit more than Taylor Swift herself? Here's your chance to see her live in concert. We're giving away 2 tickets to Taylor Swift's show in London on Saturday, June 22nd. Imagine being part of the magic, all thanks to Like a Girl Media. Entering is easy. Subscribe, share, and show us which episodes inspired you the most. Visit our website or check our social media for all the details. Don't just dream it, be it. Thrive like a girl and make this summer unforgettable. Contest opens globally, void where prohibited, must be 18 or older to enter, no purchase necessary. Subscribe and share with hashtag Thrive Like a Girl and tag us at likeagirl_media for entry. Unlimited entries means unlimited chances. Winner chosen at random after contest closes May 20th, 2024. Will be notified via DM. Make sure your profiles are not private. Check full rules on our site. This is your shot to see Taylor Swift live. Don't miss it. Hello there, and welcome to the Hit Like a Girl podcast. My name is Joy Rios, and on this show, we talk about how crazy complicated the world of healthcare is, and each one of our guests gets to share their area of expertise to help us put the big picture together, the big, crazy puzzle. So if you don't mind, we have 2 guests today, and I would like you both to take a minute to introduce yourselves, and I'm going to start with you.
Hi, Joy. Thank you for having us on your podcast today. My name is Dr. Jamie Fernandez. I'm the family medicine resident at Harbor UCLA and digital health equity leader.
Okay.
And hi, my name is Betty Vellante. Thank you again so much for, I'm honored to being in here. Well, my journey is long, but let's just cut it short. I'm a very non-traditional pre-med. I do aspire to become a physician one day in this health equity, digital health equity space and mindset. And yeah, if anything, put me as an advocate, that'd be more my label.
Okay. And can you guys tell me how you know one another?
Sure. I'm happy to share a story. So just a little bit of background about myself. I was born in Los Angeles. I'm a Latina American. I'm the first one in my family to go to medical school, and the path to become a doctor has been quite challenging, to say the least. So by the time I got to medical school, I realized how important it is to give back. So since then, I've been collaborating with organizations like Mi Mentor and the Latino Medical Student Associations, and hold either webinars or speeches just to talk to other non-traditional underrepresented students going into medicine and sharing my path. So last year, I was sharing my journey on a Woman in Medicine webinar for Mi Mentor. And part of my journey, I shared that I was interested in health tech and telemedicine. And Betty was in the audience. And usually people reach out to me with questions about how do I study for my MCAT, or I'm really not nervous about applying to medical school. But Betty reached out with a different purpose.
Yeah, so I was in Los Angeles and Charles Drew. That's where they were hosting Mi Mentor. It was actually a hybrid conference. So yeah, we were very small of us. And when you made that announcement, I was like, oh my word, I think I found someone that thinks like me. Because for such a long time, my background being biomedical engineering, coming into UC Irvine, I didn't even know the word engineering, because as a child, my roles was confused between being an adult, translating for my parents and my family. And then, so I had no space to really think about, you know, what I really liked or what I'm into. So when I got into college, you know, knock on wood that everything worked out for me, getting into a good school, but still I had no clue what the term engineering was. And yet my counselor said, you're good in math. I can see that. Maybe you should consider it. And so he had to break it down for me. And so since then, moving forward, I kind of paved the way for myself, trying to pretty much, you know, find answers. And I just felt like a lone wolf for such a long time. And so when Jamie said, hey, there's this opportunity, in a heartbeat, I contacted her right away.
And what was the opportunity?
So at the time, we were hosting a digital health conference. And Betty is also a very talented videographer and photographer. So she joined on board. And that was a very successful conference where we brought people of color, digital health leaders coming in and kind of sharing their experience in the space. So one thing I did want to, you know, bring up is that Betty's experience is quite normal in the healthcare field. Throughout in all of medical school, pre-med, I went to UCLA for undergrad and medical school, I wasn't taught about digital health equity. It wasn't until my fourth year at med school when COVID came that they realized, oh, we should do a really quick course on telemedicine. And we did like 2 days of like, this is how you sign in and that's it, you're done. And then I graduated, went to residency, and the first couple of years, I was doing some phone visits and then mainly in person. But I noticed that a lot of my patients I saw, so I work in Harbor UCLA, which is LA County, serves 80% Medicaid, Medi-Cal patients, majority Black and Brown, Spanish-speaking patients. And I noticed that out of 7 patients I was seeing on my panel, I would always have about 3 or 4 no-shows. And those were patients that I really needed to see, like patients with really uncontrolled diabetes, patients who I really needed to see. And I started digging through their chart and realized that they had a really big pattern of no-shows, and they would be the perfect patients to do telemedicine with. So the next time I did see them, I offered the services to them, and it was actually quite interesting. Some of them didn't even know we had those capabilities. This was already 2 years after the pandemic. And for me, that was just such an eye-opener and really got me to start thinking about digital health equity.
So is that in terms of communication, like they weren't communicated to, or was it a language barrier, or what were the reasons behind them not knowing what was available to them?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So usually a doctor-patient interactions, the patient walks into the room and the doctor says, okay, I'll see you, I'll follow up in 3 months. So doctors have the option, at least in my clinic, to offer either a video or a phone visit. But a lot of times, doctors don't offer the other options if they don't believe that the patient has the internet capabilities or the technological expertise to actually do this. So it's easier just not to offer it.
Gotcha.
So one aspect could be bias from the physician part. The other aspect could be mistrust from the patient side as well. And also the way we communicate it. So for instance, the word portal is medical jargon.
Okay.
It does not translate in Spanish.
What's the right word? What would you say?
I don't know. So the way I pitch this telemedicine to my patients is I say, do you use WhatsApp? And they all use WhatsApp.
Of course, they all use WhatsApp.
Yeah, they're on Facebook, they're messaging their family in other countries. And I was like, you know what, you can message me the way you talk to your family on WhatsApp. And their eyes open. They're like, what? My doctor's on WhatsApp? And then I say, okay, it's not called WhatsApp, but something similar.
I love it.
So you utilize it like that. And then they're intrigued a bit. And then that's how I get to start the conversation. Let's continue speaking like this so that when you do have those high blood sugars, you can message me right away.
And how has that translated as far as usage since you started pitching?
Yeah, a really, really big uptake. In my class, there's 3 classes, each class with 12 residents. And as a digital health equity lead, I get to actually bring in students to work with me and shadow me as I do the telemedicine visits. And the students are the ones helping the patient enroll and getting them through the process. So I've actually had, this project started about 2 months ago. So we've had two to three full clinic days. So that means 12 patients that were all video who had never done it before.
And how have they gone?
You know, rocky. To say the least, but it's been a really great up and down, because when a patient opens up their home to you in a telemedicine visit, you learn so much.
Yeah. As soon as you said WhatsApp, I'm like, oh, that's what will click with the Latin community, like 100%. And I'm sure others as well. And so once you're able to like put that in their mind, of course they're going to pick it up. That's much more, I totally feel you. That's much more like at home and where people would feel comfortable than saying, hey, log into your patient portal.
Yes. Can I add a little bit on that actually? Because like, exactly what Jamie said, it was the best way to communicate with the patient of explaining what a software is in their language. And I think that is the biggest thing of educating and communicating and creating that initial trust at first impression. Because some doctors will say, oh, well, do you have internet? And that internet is a confusing word for some people. They'd be like, oh, Wi-Fi, broadband in my home. No.
They're not thinking of their phone.
Exactly. And so that is a big thing. And frankly enough, like in terms of like, I can speak a little bit more of like the Latin community. We're very shy and we fear a lot. And we honestly do not become very honest, even if we are like the same ethnicity practitioner who, you know, is communicating with you, you're in the same ethnicity, but it's still, it's a challenge that even till this day, I even face it. I see it every day at community clinics, and I try to communicate with them, what is the best way for them to understand me and how can I teach them, especially with technology? So yeah, I like that idea with WhatsApp. So I'm probably going to use that too. Yeah.
I think it's really smart. So as you are creating curricula around digital health equity, what does that look like? And as you're trying to teach people, because it sounds like it's education on the provider side as well as the patient side.
Yes, yes. And this curriculum is designed very intentionally. So through my path, learning about digital health equity started really at Vibe, which was earlier this year in February, and learning about the Techquity for the Health Foundation's Techquity Coalition. And then I started doing research about other medical schools and whether or not they have a digital health equity or a telemedicine curriculum. And I actually found that in the year 2000, in Health and Tech did a systematic review of telemedicine curriculum in undergraduate schools, and they only found 28 programs. And of those, I did a quick search and only 3 of them mentioned the word equity.
Wow.
Yeah. So that opened like a huge red flag for me. And then I started really wanting to understand the problem a little bit more. So like I said, I like to speak to groups of students. So I recently gave a speech at the Summer Urban Health Fellowship, which consisted of 45 underrepresented Black and Brown students going into the health fields. And I just did a survey. How many of you have ever heard the term digital health equity? Want to guess?
0. Maybe 1?
10% had heard the term. Okay. Yeah, 10% had heard the term. And then I gave my presentation. It was very simple. You know, digital health equity needs to be very inclusive, build trust in a way that people understand. And it was a very easy concept for Gen X millennials to understand. And after the presentation, I surveyed again, and 90% of the students felt a responsibility as future providers to use digital health to enable care with their patients.
That's amazing. So one of the things that I have been thinking about a lot lately and talking with people that I know is like digital health is such a term that we throw around but can we speak to ways that has actually made a difference? And when the theory versus the practice of that concept of digital health bringing equity, do you get to see that in play? Do you have any evidence? And even in this short amount of time that you've been talking about it, can you share any stories or experiences around how digital health has made a difference or made things more equitable?
Yeah, I have one patient story particularly comes to mind. I had a patient. He's a construction worker, 45-year-old man, multiple chronic conditions, but we were working on hypertension. When he sees me, he's always really nervous. His blood pressure's through the roof, but he swears at home it's normal. So I said, okay, that's fine. So let's do a video visit. Go home, take your blood pressure, and we'll see what it is. So I had my student work with him, connect him. He was like, wow, this is great. I don't have to miss work. I can just like kind of step out and it'll be fine. So we're like, okay. So the day of the visit, he's at home that morning. And I was like, okay, it's time to check your blood pressure. Can you get your machine, please, and show me how you check your blood pressure? So he's like, okay. So he's really excited to show me how he does it. And I see him take the blood pressure machine and put it around his wrist.
Oh.
I was like, no wonder your blood pressure is low at home. So because I was looking through the video, I was able to really course correct him at the moment and, you know, really instruct him to sit by his side, make sure his arm is in 90 degrees and take his blood pressure correctly. And that was like a really good teaching moment. And having the students there by my side, I just, you know, turned around and looked at them. They were like, oh my goodness, this is so easy. And if we hadn't had this experience, that patient would have been in my office and I might have taken out a blood pressure medication.
Right.
Which was the wrong course of action.
Right. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit more about your journey as pre-med? I would love to hear just like pull out what it is, because it's a journey that we haven't heard much about on the podcast, and I would like to bring light to it.
Yeah, of course. So actually, non-traditional pre-meds is now becoming more common than we think, especially now this day and age. I think a lot of medical students do state like, oh, if I can go back in time, I wish I've done a gap year to just done other things. So I took that advice entering into this biomedical engineer world, when I took a class in coding, this was a mandatory class, right? It was not an elective. It was a requirement for me to graduate, and it opened up my world once again because I didn't know what coding was. Someone told me, okay, I just said to my counselor, whatever that takes me to get into medical school. And he's like, I know just the one, biomedical engineering. I was like, okay. But no one ever told me, like, I think as soon as I express it to people, they're like, no, that is so tough. This is going to be really, really tough. And I switched out from biology out to undeclared because I didn't feel that this was just for me. I loved math too much and it was just my comfort zone. It's a universal language. And I can go back to also tying it with images. So yeah, so coding, I was like, okay, maybe I want to switch out my major. But I'm just going to stick to this course. And then as I finished, I worked as a medical scribe, you know, and this is what in my home country or my parents' home country in Peru, they call it professional years. So more, I like that better. I worked at a medical scribe as a medical scribe at BreastLink. And through this experience, I was able to learn more of what it is in the clinical setting, learn a bit about the routine, and just saving up for myself as a pre-med to prepare for my applications. As I studied for the MCAT and everything, and I took it, I was applying back in 2019. I realized that I wanted to do a dual program. That for sure was something I wanted to do. And as I was doing my research at the time, there was no dual programs that involved like Masters of Science with the medical degree. So it was very, you know, public health, Masters of Business. I think Stanford has one for being a Juris Doctor, but nothing that involved Masters of Science. And I asked myself, why not? Like, computational biology is important. It's big. Or maybe someone who wants to go and, you know, I just tapped a little bit, but I could only imagine the opportunities and what the world we're going to enter into, right? And so I said to myself, no, I don't feel ready. There's a big curiosity in me. And that's what this gap year is about, is to answer those curious questions and go with that gut. So I took the chance and I went to apply. I was fortunate enough to study in London, so University College of London. Got my master's in biomaterials and tissue engineering. And for my thesis, I said to myself, okay, if we said coding, you wanted to almost switch out your major in software. Here we are studying abroad. Let's knock out two birds, one stone, see how this is going to play out. And boy, was it challenging, but exciting at the same time to see the end of just finishing it and reflecting on it, saying, wow, there is potential now. I have this mindset. And now I could only imagine getting into like medical school, introducing this and figuring out a way to provide a curriculum, to provide a chance for medical students that have, you know, curiosity with computational science and software or something, because AI, that's the buzz in this conference, as we all know. And so why not come and provide that sort of opportunities for a lot of medical programs?
And it has received positive feedback. Is there anybody else that's going to be able to follow in your footsteps?
I really hope so. Again, I think the more I share, I realize, like, say, for example, I'm volunteering at a free health clinic. It's called Orange County Eye Project. I'm also an AI program manager where I'm trying to implement an AI tool to community serve clinics. But apart from that, mainly I'm also utilized as a Spanish translator in this space. That's a big thing. And what I realize is that sometimes when I'm explaining and teaching students and training them how to translate in Spanish with medical terms, and then being concise in the intake, right? So that physicians can look and read so that they can do the next steps. You know, sometimes I ask myself, like, what are you into? You know, like I, you know, when we have some downtime and when I tell them what I'm into, everyone seems like, whoa.
You're so smart. I'm so intimidated.
Yeah. Everyone's intimidated. And I was like, No, don't be. Like, you know how to use a computer as well as I. I'm sure you took one stats class that made us force us to learn this one software called R. You know, like, you've done it. It's okay. I know it was a challenge, but give yourself that chance again, or maybe dabble in other softwares and don't be afraid. And that's what I want to do. I want to be that sort of person to give that support because I understand. But I don't know what it is about this fear with medical students. I think they're so caught up with like trying to do all the other things, patient care, bedside manner, which are, of course, they're so important. But with AI entering into healthcare space, we're noticing right now that everyone is trying to create an education program for physicians. Where is it for pre-meds? And how that way, how can we make a better net positive forward to making this system healthcare better?
Well, having just come out of your training or even being part of it, I think you guys have an interesting perspective. And if you could wave a magic wand as far as wish lists of what you wish was included or content or curricula that you would like others to learn, what would you add? Let's start with Jamie.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
So I always say the mission, every student that comes to work with me, I start off with like, I want to change your mindset of what wellness means. I think a lot of people in underserved communities, we think that health only happens when you see a doctor because you feel sick. But a lot of our community is walking around with 3 or 4 chronic diseases. So they're always sick. Mm-hmm. So by doing telemedicine and by a person being able to access a doctor more than one, having multiple touch points and at the time that they need it, all of a sudden, health becomes a continuous way of life.
Right.
And I think that telemedicine has a really good promise to do that. And by teaching medical students and the new generation of doctors to think in that way, then you start questioning, oh, of course I need to talk to them in between visits because that's what health is. It's all the time.
There's just so much, like even in community service, like health centers, there's always a shortage with translators. I think that's one of the biggest things that I'm noticing. And sometimes like if I'm not there and patients come and ask for me, there's so many other Spanish translators that come to volunteer as pre-meds. But sometimes when all of us are not present, because of course we're volunteers, I feel this is where the digital health space comes into play because it's saying, well, I'm sure there's so many other pre-meds in Texas or in rural areas that know how to translate. They have a big dream to becoming a physician. They probably don't have as much access to having these opportunities. Why can we bring them much closer to this sort of opportunity in those clinical setting space when we need them?
I love that. Ladies, I'm really excited to see and follow your journey. I mean, you've come a long way, even in just a short amount of time, like what you're saying of like, oh, we've got a new idea since February and look where we've taken it. So I can't wait to check in with you a year from now and 5 years from now and to see where you all have gone. And so if I would like to connect with you and follow you, how can I and our listeners do so?
You can connect me on Instagram, Engineer to Premed, also on LinkedIn, Betty Vellante. Yeah, that's the best two ways to contact me. And I'll be providing more content. I'm hoping to provide more of my journey because it took a long time to just finish where I'm at and figuring out completing certain things. But now that I just now feel ready, I just have to take that MCAT, and which I can share a little bit more at another time. But if you have any other questions as well with like software, how do I do this? Especially now with UCLA, that's all Jamie's department, but I'm hoping to learn more about this so that I can tell these to pre-meds and saying, this is possible for you. You didn't have to go the way I did now because that added a lot of years under my belt, but I'm glad that it's reducing and it's making it possible so people can get into the space.
You can always follow me on Jamie Fernandez on TikTok or on Instagram or on LinkedIn. My first name is spelled a little funny, so J-H-A-I-M-Y, but you'll find it there. But yes, I'm happy to connect with any pre-health student who's listening to this podcast and is interested in digital health. Like Betty will say, I'm like really good at answering DMs and I'm always talking to students on the phone and, you know, referring different things. So like, Joey, this podcast is the first thing I refer.
I love
so
that.
Anybody wants to know about digital health equity, listen to Joy's podcast. It's a really good introduction of voices that are not represented elsewhere. And then after that, you just become very curious.
Well, thank you so much for sharing with us. And also thank you, Charisse, for joining in. I appreciate your insights because You have a really great perspective as well. And this has been a great conversation. So thank you, ladies. We will talk soon.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. You can learn more about us or this guest by going to our website or visiting us on any of the socials with the handle HitLikeAGirlPod. Thanks again. See you soon. Again, thank you so much for listening to the Hit Like a Girl podcast. I am truly grateful for you, and I'm wondering if you could do me a quick favor. Would you be willing to follow or subscribe to this podcast, or maybe leave us a rating or review? Or if you're feeling extra generous, would you share this episode on your Instagram stories or with a friend? All those things help us podcasters out so much. I'm the show's host, Joy Rios, and I'll see you next time.